Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. We are coming to you live this Wednesday. It's the 15th of September. In just a few moments, we're going to hear an interview that we did earlier today with Tim Gagelein, Special Assistant to President George W. Bush and Director of the Office of Public Liaison at the White House. He is featured in last week's Newsweek, a story written about him called Tending the Flock, Soul Man, a White House Aide Keeps Faith with the Faithful. We'll be talking with that aide, Tim Gagelein, in just a moment here. After that conversation, it's open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll be opening up those phone lines, and we'd like your reaction to the interview that we do with Tim Gagelein, but also I want you to answer a few questions for me. First of all, listen carefully to this interview. The parameters under which you do a White House interview are pretty strict, so we had to submit questions beforehand to Tim and to his staff, and he wants to see what the questions are, and then we're giving a very strict, they reminded us many times, time limit. 15 minutes was the max. Now, under those parameters, you can only ask so many questions, and you can only, you got to get through as many as you can. I'm curious, what questions should I have asked this White House aide? What question did I fail to ask? Well, there's always a blind spot when you're doing an interview like this. What question should I have asked? Listen carefully and answer that question on the other side of this interview. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, this is probably all the closer we'll get to the Oval Office here on Issues Etc., but if I did have the opportunity here on this program to interview President George W. Bush himself, what question should I ask him? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. After open lines this hour, Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us in the third hour to do part three of our 11-part daily series on Islam. Today we're going to talk about how women fare under the Islamic faith. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College in Jacksonville. He's got that new book called The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. The last half hour of the program, Pastor Ben Ball joins us to talk about dealing with the death of a teenager. We would call this a sudden death. We would call this struck down in one's prime. There are no sudden things with God. There are no accidents with God. One of Pastor Ball's former confirmands, a 14-year-old girl, Allison White, was killed last week when she was struck by a car on her way to school. We're going to be talking about the family, the congregation, the pastor dealing with sudden death in the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. today. Tim Gagelein, I spoke with him earlier today. He's Special Assistant to President George W. Bush, featured in Newsweek this last week. The article was called Tending to the Flock. I began by asking him about the typical day of duties for him at the White House.
Well, you know, every day is a typically atypical day. There are no two that are the same. And it's tempting to say that the structure is pretty much the same each day, but even that's not the case. Some days you seem to have a series of meetings where you're planning for a number of things with the president or with the cabinet or the senior staff at the White House. There are other days when you have to be traveling either with the president or by yourself speaking or meeting or doing other things out in the country. And then there are other days which I'm sure are very similar to the work days of most Americans. You come in and very early, you maybe have a working breakfast or lunch. You may have a number of teleconferences or planning or scheduling meetings. But above all, the one thing that ties together every day is that you are really at the service of the President of the United States, that it's the job of the Office of Public Liaison, where I work, to get the President's message out. We can't lobby by federal law, but it's very important that each and every day we communicate and we educate to different coalitions and constituencies in America what the president's agenda is, why he believes what he believes, and what he intends to do. And also, equally, and perhaps more importantly, very important to listen to people, and I promise I do my best to be a good listener, but to make sure that we are reflecting back into the White House bloodstream at the very highest levels what the views are of real Americans where they really live and work. And I love people. I love the intersection of policy and communication. It's a wonderful way to serve Christ and a wonderful way to serve the president.
You are quoted in a Newsweek piece recently. You say, this president would be only half understood if he were not seen as a man of faith. What do you mean?
This president is commander-in-chief. He is the most powerful man in the country and in the world. And his constitutional obligation, above all, is to protect and to defend the Constitution of the United States of America and to be our commander-in-chief. And yet, the things that you can't state in constitutions, both the written kind in America and the unwritten kind in places like Great Britain and others, is what sorts of men we bring to office. And one of the wonderful things about the very short and young history of this great republic is that we have often brought to the Oval Office by election men of great faith and fortitude in that regard. And George W. Bush does not see himself as pastor-in-chief or sermonizer-in-chief, but he does realize that he does have to and must rely on God to be alive and at work in the affairs of men and women in this country. The president is a praying president. He's a president who likes to study and to read the Bible. He's in prayer. He's a great man of faith, as are both of the Bushes. And he believes very strongly that he has been put at the White House in this time in history for an important purpose, and he sees himself on a mission. And this president is very cognizant of time, and he's very cognizant of making a contribution that will last. And I think that there are many people who see the president's faith, and they like that very much. They may dislike his policies. They may disagree with him, even if they strongly support him on some issues. But they see his faith. And I've had a chance to see the president and to work with him at close range for 5 years. And I have seen a man who, as a Christian, sees it as part of his faith to be a good steward of his time and of the resources with which he has been given.
So, Tim, some fear that President Bush is a puppet of the religious right. How would you respond to that?
I would say a couple of things. The first is that the president, above all things, is a man who is very comfortable in his own skin. He is a man who knows his mind very well. He's a man who knows how to set achievable priorities, large though they be, and he is a man who is not intimidated by cheap criticism. He is a president who is very comfortable engaging with people who disagree and even strongly disagree with him. And when people, list the merits of the disagreements, this is a president who listens and who welcomes that disagreement. And that, I think, is a very healthy thing. But to suggest that he is anybody less than his own man with these very strong convictions, I think, is a fundamental misreading of who George W. Bush is.
George Bush has asked the question, does the Democratic Party take African-American voters for granted? Well, here is my answer. The book of Matthew reminds us, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing.
That was Senator John Kerry, Tim, at a meeting of the National Baptist Convention USA last week in New Orleans. Tim, where is the outrage from the left when Kerry waxes religious and quotes scripture?
Well, let me just say, unfortunately, John Kerry felt it was important to go into a church and to use the Holy Scripture against the president. And, you know, it's tempting after hearing a comment like that for, you know, me to state for the listeners, you know, the two or three things that are either acceptable or unacceptable about what he just said. But I think sometimes, as Winston Churchill learned, Sometimes it's better to speak, and sometimes it's better to let your opponent's words work against him. The more outlandish the statement, the more ridiculous the statement, sometimes it's better that you just let his person and his words hang out there and then let people decide. But I would just say that I think to use God's holy word as a weapon is probably not a good thing.
Is the administration's support for the state of Israel based in any way on the president's religious beliefs?
You know, I can say categorically that the president's strong support for Israel, the president's strong belief about the fundamental need for transition in the Middle East generally, is not a result of a close reading of the Bible. It's a result of a very strong conviction about what is best for the national security of the United States of America and what is best for our allies abroad. Just since coming to office, we have seen, through George W. Bush's policies, the most remarkable transition in the Middle East in 25 years. In Iraq, Saddam Hussein is gone and never to return. The Taliban, about two-thirds of which is smashed, continues to be a reduced and reducing influence, and good for that. Al-Qaeda is a vibrant opponent and enemy, but the United States and our allies are doing everything we can to crush Al-Qaeda. Iran has a remarkable reformist movement that is not going away. General Musharraf in Pakistan has become an ally in the war on terror. And for the first time, Pakistan and India, two nuclear-tipped powers, are actually sitting down at a conference table to have serious discussions about the fate of Kashmir. We have seen a real transition of American military power out of Saudi Arabia and into Qatar in a way that has been seamless and very good for American foreign policy. In Afghanistan, we are going to have the first presidential election ever in October, and Mr. Karzai remains a solid pro-American head of state. And I could go on and on. These are remarkable achievements. They are a result of George W. Bush's vision for the Middle East. And we are going to see better things ahead. We believe that we will see not only democratic elections in Iraq, but we will see finally a democracy in Iraq. I mean, who would have ever thought that 10 million Iraqis, 10 million, would have registered to vote? But that is an incredible achievement, and it is because of the success of the president's policy and the incredible work that our military men and women are doing there. And in Israel, we now have the greatest movement ever with regard to Gaza and the West Bank. It's being done by a conservative prime minister, and we have in George W. Bush, the first president, to say that we can have a sovereign and independent Palestinian state living next to a sovereign and independent Israel. And that is real achievement.
We're talking with Tim Gagline about faith and presidential politics. He's special assistant to President George W. Bush and director of the Office of Public Liaison at the White House. Tim, here's President Bush at a news conference last year in London.
Mr. President, when you talk about peace in the Middle East, you've often said that freedom is granted by the Almighty. Some people who share your beliefs don't believe that Muslims worship the same Almighty. I wondered about your views on that.
I do say that freedom is the Almighty's gift to every person. I also condition it by saying freedom is not America's gift to the world. It's much greater than that, of course. And I believe we worship the same God.
Tim, why did he say this? I believe we worship the same God.
Let me just say, I think, and I'm actually very glad that you ran the reporter's question, because that really does put it in context. People know that George W. Bush is a Christian, and they know that he is not a theologian, and they know that it's not the job of the president to stand before the World Press Corps and begin to make distinctions between the great three monotheistic religions of Judaism and Islam and Christianity. The president has made it very clear that as a Christian, he believes in a triune God. The president certainly understands the distinctions among and between Islam, Judaism, and Christianity.
The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
That was President Bush at the Islamic Center of Washington, D.C. in 2001, Tim. That was less than a week after September 11th. Could the Bush administration be underestimating the religious ingredient in Islamic terrorism?
I think that history will prove and show that George W. Bush, among all of his leadership gifts and abilities, was able very early on to distinguish that this was not going to be a war among or between Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. And the president wanted to do everything he could to distinguish, and he has done this consistently since 9/11, to distinguish what is in some parts of the world seen as a religious war over against a war of fanatics who have misapplied and misinterpreted a particular religion and have used it against not only America, but now Spain and Russia and Indonesia and many others. And I think that the president's view is confirmed in the fact that much of the worst terrorism we have seen has been by some Muslims against other Muslims. We just recently saw it, as I say, in Indonesia, which by percentages has the highest Muslim population in the world. We saw it as recently as this week with the terrible killing of Muslims against Muslims in Iraq. Most of the death and destruction that we have seen in Iraq is by these same zealots against their own countrymen who not only want to support a democracy, but want to work in the security forces of the new Iraq. I think that George W. Bush has been enormously responsible about making that distinction, and it's what a president needs and should do.
Some are concerned that the president himself and his administration has been misled by neoconservatives, usually typified big government, pro-Israel, Rockefeller Republicans. Is this true?
Let me just say categorically it's untrue. And let me say as well that this has been a kind of a battering ram that that pops up by people who tend to be in the hard left and people who tend to be self-styled conservatives who in fact are really not conservatives at all. Very recently, Pat Buchanan appeared on Meet the Press. And I think that his bona fides are pretty strong. And when he began to use this kind of language, you realize that it's really perfectly destructive. The influence of conservatives without prefixes has been strong in this administration because George W. Bush is a strong conservative, and the policies that have emanated from the Oval Office are conservative because the president is one. But to suggest that we got into a war in Afghanistan or in Iraq because a neoconservative said we should is on its face, prima facie, nothing short of ridiculous.
Very quickly, final question. What role will faith play in this presidential election coming up?
Well, let me just say, I think it was our opponent, John Kerry, who said he would not wear his religion on his sleeve and then proceeded immediately thereafter to talk about his religion. George W. Bush has been very careful to not use his faith in any political sense. He does not believe that faith should be used as a political tool. He does not believe that faith should be used as a criticism of other people. And I think it's fair to say that he is not a Christian politician, that he is a president who is a believer in Jesus Christ. And he makes that distinction very carefully because he never wants to be seen as using his religion, his Christianity, inappropriately. And I think that the prudence that he has applied in this regard versus some of the comments we heard earlier from his opponent speak not only to the faith in public life, but they speak to the character and the careful temperament of the man who is our president.
Tim Gagelein, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Todd, it's all my pleasure. KFUO is my favorite station in Missouri. I'll be there this week, and we'll be listening while I'm on the ground.
That was an interview earlier today with Tim Gagelein. He's a special assistant to President George W. Bush, director of the Office of Public Liaison at the White House. He was featured this week in a Newsweek article, this week or last week, "Tending to the Flock Soul Man, a White House Aide Keeps Faith with the Faithful." We're going to open up the phone lines for your questions and your comments, your reaction to that White House interview. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As I asked before we played the interview, what question did I fail to ask? You always got a blind spot here, and you're not going to hurt my feelings by saying, Wilkin, you missed it. You should have asked this. Please tell me. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, Gagelein is probably all the closer we'll get to the Oval Office, but if I did have the opportunity on this program to interview the president himself, what question or questions should I ask him? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, as well as your general reaction to our interview with Tim Gagelein from the White House. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Car phone callers, first-time callers, and internet callers will, of course, get top priority. This break is a great time to call. Tim Gagelein, by the way, is a Lutheran, a Missouri Synod Lutheran from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he was hired, I believe, out of Gary Bauer's organization. They had some nice things to say about him in the Newsweek article. We'll talk a little bit about that and talk with you after this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Also, he did mention Pat Robertson there in one of the last questions we asked. There is a commentary in Sunday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch from this last Sunday, "The True Believer Conservative," about Pat Buchanan's new book. And Pat Buchanan is leveling the charge that the Bush administration is being led or misled by neoconservatives, by big government, pro-Israel, Rockefeller Republicans, and that it's not true conservatism. You heard Tim Gagelein's response, your response as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ralph Reed said about Tim, "Tim's just flat out the best I've ever seen at this job, and I've seen them all." He is a former Bush advisor and former head of the Christian Coalition. Coming out of Gary Bauer's presidential campaign and out of Gary Bauer's organization, here is a man who speaks of a Christian president to the faithful. We'll talk about that when we come back.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does God's law motivate the Christian to do good works? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. The next edition of the Issues Etc. Journal contains an article titled "Getting Clear on Sanctification." It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Stephen Hine. You can receive a complimentary copy of the next Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line 1-800-737-0172. Plus, I've written an article titled "The Fad-Driven Church. Why Are So Many Pastors Worshiping at the Altar of Novelty?" Find out with the Issues Etc. Journal, 1-800-737-0172. The next issue also details Uwe Simonetto's journey from hedonism to Lutheranism, 1-800-737-0172. Now, if you enjoy Issues Etc., the radio program, you need to get the Issues Etc. Journal. Call now, 1-800-737-0172, and ask for a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. You may have seen the recent headlines making a connection between gambling and good health in senior citizens. The headline on the CBS News website asked the question, gambling therapeutic for seniors? Stuart Shepard talked to the person who did the research, and she's concerned that her work is being misconstrued.
Past research tied gambling to health issues in younger people, so Ronnie Desai at Yale set out to find if gambling magnifies health problems in older people. The surprising result, seniors engaged in recreational gambling reported being healthier than those who did not.
We are not in any way saying that gambling is good for you. We're not saying that gambling makes older folks healthier. What we are saying is that older folks who gamble are healthier.
And her research may just be picking up on a larger component of healthy aging.
Seniors who remain active and particularly socially active tend to be healthier and to remain healthier for longer.
She says she does not want to imply that people should start gambling to add years to their lives.
I'm sure it wasn't the researcher's intention to give that impression, but it's a clear impression that I would receive as being a senior myself.
Tom Tucker is with the Council on Compulsive Gambling of California.
All our studies indicate that people who spend more and more time gambling become sicker due to stress-related illnesses, failing to take care of their medication properly, and so on and so forth.
He suspects it's good health that enables seniors to socialize, and that may include gambling. For Family News in Focus, I'm Stuart Shepard.
Dr. Desai is especially concerned because she says older people are at higher risk for problem and pathological gambling. And the results are especially devastating to those living on limited incomes. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Fort Bellefontaine is holding their historic encampment and shoot on the banks of the Mississippi River, September 18th and 19th. This encampment is a recreation of the annual fall gathering of the trappers, traders, military personnel, and Native Americans, which took place at Fort Bellefontaine. Visit the first American fort west of the Mississippi River and the site of Lewis and Clark's final stop on their journey of discovery. Contact St. Louis County Parks and Recreation for more information.
The book is titled Order Restored, A Biblical Interpretation of Health, Medicine, and Healing, and it's our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. The cost is $20.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040. Do modern-day faith healers have a biblical understanding of faith and healing? Find out with Order Restored. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Click the What's New section.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday, September the 15th. What's on your mind? It's open lines for the next 25 minutes. Before the break, we had an opportunity to play for you an interview we'd pre-recorded today with Tim Gagelein, White House aide, special assistant to President George W. Bush, director of the Office of Public Liaison there at the White House, featured this week in Newsweek magazine in the article. It's about him tending the flock. Soul Man, a White House aide, keeps faith with the faithful. We had an opportunity to ask him a number of questions in that short interview. What did I leave out of that interview? What question should I have asked, given the opportunity to speak with the White House? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If there was ever an opportunity, which is unlikely, but if there ever were an opportunity to talk to the Oval Office itself, to the President himself, what questions would be necessary to ask there, in your opinion? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727, 25 minutes of open lines, anything you want to talk about, your reaction to that interview with Tim Gagelein. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September. You know, when we first looked at this, we wondered whether or not it was up our alley. And the more I look at it, the more I think it is up our alley. It's a book called Order Restored, A Biblical Interpretation of Health, Medicine, and Healing. You can order the book, and it's all about healing and the role of healing in Scripture, in the Christian life, in God's plan of redemption. The book is $20.99 plus shipping and handling. You can order it from Concordia Publishing House. Call them any weekday during regular business hours. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. My producer talked earlier today with a customer service rep from Concordia Publishing House, and she mentioned that this book is going out their door as fast as anything else. They're getting a lot of orders, and people are hearing about it on the radio. That means they're hearing about it here on Issues Etc. That's why it's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Order Restored. You can also browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Maybe you want to join other Issues Etc. listeners. They're onto something, you know, by ordering Order Restored, 1-800-325-3040. When you're at our website, issuesetc.org, look under the What's New section. You'll find information and a way to order the book. Or you can stop into one of two locations that Concordia Publishing has here in St. Louis, where they operate bookstores, one at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis, the other here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Follow the signs to the CPH bookstore. Look for the book, Order Restored, Ask for the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for September, and mention that you heard it on Issues, Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go first to Dave, who's calling from San Francisco, listening on the Internet. Dave, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, hi, Todd. I wish I had caught the whole interview that you had done with, it was Tim...
Gagline.
Gagline, okay.
Yes.
I'll look up his name. The I tuned in just as you were talking about whether or not there were the neocon ties to causing the war in Iraq. And have you ever heard of what's called the Project for a New American Century?
I've only heard about it, and that's all the more I can say. I know nothing specifically.
Okay. The PNAC is what the acronym is for, PNAC, and you can look at their website. It's newamericancentury.org.
What's the point of it?
Well, they are the neocons that essentially devised a war. Essentially, they planned the war 5, maybe 10 years before 9/11.
Now, what possible evidence do you have for that? I mean,
I'm as concerned about
neoconservatives as the next guy, but that seems a bit. I find it hard to believe that.
No, go to their website, then you look at on the left hand column. Let's see. I think their section is under reports and statements, publications and reports. Click on that. And then go to the bottom, their report from, they have it dated of September 2000, which would have been about a year before 9/11, but it said that this report was actually put together at least 1995. They tried to get Bill Clinton to sign on to it. This was after the fall of the Soviet Union, and PNAC, which is made up of Wolfowitz, Cheney, Pearl, start naming neocons, and you're going to have the same people in the list.
Okay, so let's cut to the chase.
Well, they sent a letter to Clinton trying to get him, after the Soviet Union fell, they were trying to get him to use the U.S. military to conquer the oil fields of the world, and then they would be able to force American democracy on the world.
All right, Dave, well, just a second. Dave, hold on a second. We could all go to the website and read the stuff for ourselves. Are you saying then that, because it sounds like you believe this stuff, are you saying that President Bush was planning this war in 2000 before September 11th?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I'll recommend a guest, a very big name reporter from out of England, Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, and I believe his he has a website, gregpalast.com. And you can book him as an interview. He's got documents that come from before Bush was president and as well as before 9/11, where they were not only planning a war on Iraq and Afghanistan, but they essentially devised the war so that it would never get to allow the Iraqis to vote.
Now, so Dave, I got to let you go because this is... We've entered the realm of speculation here, and I think you've made the point, at least what you believe the point to be. I want you to just for a moment, folks, I'm as concerned about the neoconservatives as anybody else. For me, the concern is probably a little different than most people. I'm not so concerned about tax policy or national defense. Those things do concern me. But first and foremost, kind of the presuppositions of pro-Israeli Zionist leanings of neoconservatives are concerning to me. But this smacks to me, what Dave was mentioning there, smacks to me very strongly of a conspiracy theory. Now, it's one made on the right, but it's still a conspiracy theory. I just want you to consider for a moment what it would take in order for a little cabal of neoconservatives. I mean, anyone can plan anything you want. I can sit in my basement and plan a war against Afghanistan. That doesn't mean I'm going to make it happen. I can write up a report and make recommendations to a president from my basement if I want to. Doesn't mean anyone's going to listen to me or that I have the ability to put it into action. We're talking about a pretty omnipotent group here if they are able actually to plan before September 11th the war that we have seen played out in Afghanistan and Iraq, and even dictate whether or not there would be elections at the end of the war. I wonder what happens to the plan if we actually get elections at the end of the war. Maybe they're not as omnipotent as people who believe this theory think they are. Now, folks, just a little word of warning. You can find just about anything you want on the internet. You can find people saying just about anything. If you want to believe what you see on the internet, you can find just about anything. You can believe just about anything and find it there in some form, proposed, asserted. And I know it's entertaining to believe these things. I know there's something that gives us a sense of security that somehow what's happened here in the war wasn't the result of, well, we got attacked by terrorists, the president, even under the influence of neoconservatives, did what he thought was best. I mean, I'm wondering why their plan didn't include the capture of Osama bin Laden. If they're so powerful, we could have had Osama bin Laden a long time ago. If they can dictate not only two wars to a president who's just been elected, but also dictate the outcome of those wars. Now, any military general will tell you that you can plan all you want, but when after the first shots are fired, your plans all go out the window, and you have to start making contingency plans. You have to resort to plan B after the first trigger is pulled. I don't know. I just find it incredible that some group could plan two wars in advance of, who knows, maybe they even knew about September 11th. So, now, in response to the question that we had about the neoconservatives that I put to Tim Gagline, he said, look, he was responding to this kind of thing. Even if you, what you believe about the neoconservatives, what you don't believe about them is irrelevant. But he said to propose that the president went to war in Afghanistan and Iraq because some neoconservatives said that he should is on the face of it false. So we'll take him at his word. I mean, he's closer to the source than any of us are. Was there a question I failed to ask of Tim Gagline there that does not require that I buy hook, line, and sinker into a conspiracy theory? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If we had opportunity to get closer to the Oval Office, perhaps to the president himself, what questions would you feel it would be necessary to ask the big man? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The commentary from Sunday's St. Louis Post-Dispatch has to do with the book by Pat Buchanan. He's making the rounds. Kevin Horrigan has written about this. He called it the true believer conservative. And he is basically, well, Kevin, what Kevin is doing in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in Sunday's edition is setting up the contrast between the new conservatives and the neoconservatives, or the old conservatives and the neoconservatives. Pat Buchanan has taken upon himself the mantle of the old conservatives. He would say it would be the Goldwater Reagan mentality, and he's a little irked. I heard an interview with him last night. He is a little peeved that he thinks not only the White House, but the Republican Party has been hijacked by what he called big government Rockefeller Republicans. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, if I see, I'm going to go back tonight and probably sit down and have dinner, and then I'm going to have a little time to reflect upon the day's events, and I'm going to think of a question that I should have asked Tim Gagline that I didn't have the opportunity to. I didn't have the presence of mind to ask. I'm going to think of the one that I'm going to give myself a dope slap and say, I should have asked that question. Have you thought of it already? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Will is calling from his car. Will, welcome to Issues, Etc. Hey, Will, welcome.
Hey there. I'm sorry I didn't hear you cut in.
That's all right.
I was speaking to your screener, and I think the reason that the liberals are so convinced that the neoconservatives are controlling everything is they just can't comprehend how so many people don't understand that their position is absolutely 100% correct. And if the neoconservatives weren't controlling them, then they would see the obvious fact that they're right.
Well, the problem is that the biggest hue and cry about neoconservatives is coming from not so much from the left. It is coming from the left to a certain degree, but from the right, too, from the likes of Pat Buchanan. He's as concerned as anyone on the left is. Now, that may well be true, but that doesn't account for why the right is concerned as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The one thing that I wish I could have done, and this was simply impossible trying to get all of our questions in. Like I said, you're not only have to submit your questions in advance, but you also have to do it in a time limit. The one thing I wish I would have done is asked a follow-up on the question about President Bush's statement regarding whether or not Muslims and Christians worship the same God. The statement was out there last year at a joint press conference, and the president said, I believe we worship the same God. It was unmistakable. People at the time, Richard Land, Gary Bauer, others, all said this cannot be. The president has made a statement, so they said, let's warn the president against being theologian in chief rather than commander in chief.
Mr. President, when you talk about peace in the Middle East, you've often said that freedom is granted by the Almighty. Some people who share your beliefs don't believe that Muslims worship the same Almighty. I wondered about your views on that.
I do say that freedom is the Almighty's gift to every person. I also condition it by saying freedom is not America's gift to the world. It's much greater than that, of course. And I believe we worship the same God.
Now, what are you to make of this? When I heard it, I heard it like a lot of other people heard it. The president saying, and the question was pretty direct there at the news conference, do you believe that Muslims and the people who agree with you, and that would, I'm presuming here, Christians, worship the same God? The president talked about freedom based in the Almighty, nothing wrong with that. And then he says, I do believe we worship the same God. What do you make of this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Kathy is calling from her car. Kathy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, Todd, I've made mention of this many times. This is the new world religion that's going to come about. And it's going to be the ecumenical council, and all this kind of stuff's coming together. And you can call me a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but the president, it's dangerous to say that. Absolutely dangerous. Jesus came to divide. He came to bring division so that the world might know that he is God, and that you can't come to God except through him. You cannot come to the Father God without believing in the Son.
Well, you're not going to get a disagreement from me there, because I think I think it's not only dangerous, I think it's positively horrific. Are you still going to vote for President Bush?
He's the lesser of the two evils. I have to really pray about it. I made a mistake the first time. I think this land, whether you want to believe it or not, is under severe judgment with the weather, with 9-1-1. And I think we're held in the balance once again, and God's looking at the heart of a true Christian, and he's going to say, are you going to be duped again? Are you really going to get down on your knees and seek me?
Kathy, thank you for the call. Now, I don't know if God is going to be paying that close attention to how people vote, whether or not they're going to be ushering in some sort of new world order, but it is deeply disturbing when anyone who professes to be a Christian, much less a president, if you want my honest opinion, I think it was a mistake made out of ignorance. Had he had the time to speak with his advisors on that question, he might have gotten a better answer to that question, or a way of of saying it that wasn't so blatantly wrong. And presidents have to say things in a nuanced way. It's politically correct to say that we worship the same God. It certainly is. Theologically, it's nonsense. It's not just wrong, it's nonsense. Now, there's a level of wrong that becomes, if it is true that Christians and Muslims worship the same God, then Christians and Muslims better get busy rewriting their entire theologies. They better. If it is true that the same God to whom I pray every day is the same God to whom Osama bin Laden prays every day, then both Christians and Muslims have got some serious rethinking to do. You see, you can't simply say, this is where the politically correct comment leaves you. It simply leaves you, it sounds good, but all of the ramifications of the statement are unexamined. For instance, had that reporter at that opportunity in London last year when the president was asked about whether or not Muslims and Christians worship the same God, been able to follow up and say, does that mean that Allah is the father of Jesus Christ? I think the president probably would have said, no, that's not what I mean. What do you mean, Mr. President? Sometimes these things that sound so good, they sound so politically correct, have terrible ramifications. And yet people hear it and they're happy to hear the president mention God. And, well, you know, it's just another day in politically correct America. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Monica's up next, calling from Swansea. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Pastor. Kudos on that interview. Congratulations to you and Jeff.
And thank you.
And you brought up the topic of which I'm keenly interested. The only reason I listen to this program is to be able to deal with the world through the eyes of our Christian faith. And so you brought up the very question that bothered me during the interview. And I guess I always wonder things like this, because you see these things on television and you always sit there, you know, dumbfounded that the interviewer doesn't say, why didn't you ask such and such? I think what I would have asked him to this guy is, did you talk to President Bush after he gave that interview and correct his theology? I think that's what I would have asked him. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's a legitimate question.
Do you know if he did or not?
I do not know.
I know because you said he was a Lutheran Christian, correct?
Yes. He's a Missouri Synod Lutheran, yes.
He's Missouri Synod.
Mm-hmm.
And what would have been wrong with President Bush being blatantly honest and say the Muslims worship their own God?
You know, that there you go, Monica.
How offended would people have been by that?
Well, I think, you know, think about that. He would have been able to say that, which is
true,
which is truthful, and it would have been stated. That's brilliant. It would have been stated in such a way that it is as least offensive as possible. Well, the Muslims worship their own God.
Well, that's something I've always wondered why we can't say that, because that doesn't offend me. In fact, that is honest, and I can deal with that. But when we start blending everybody in the same, pluralistic society the way we have, it bothers me. I wish the president would just say yes or no, or just say, well, they worship their own God.
Monica, thank you for the call. You see, the ramifications of statements like this are very important to play out. If the Muslims worship the same God as Christians, then, look, why stop at the Muslims? Why not go on to the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Sikhs and the Wiccans and all the others? You can't stop. You can't. Brady's calling from his car. Brady, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
Hello. Can
hello.
You hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call here. I'm traveling from Washington, D.C. I was just tuned into your program, and you were talking about the conspiracy thing with the cabal and all that, and I was just trying to make heads or tails of what this program believes or what, and I'm getting the impression that is this a Christian station, basically, or...
Yes, it certainly is.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. Let me help you and your viewers out a little bit here.
Well, make it quick because our time is very short.
Well, I've got a buddy of mine that works in an agency in the government that and he fairly regularly interacts personally with the president. And he's told me on any number of occasions that this president firmly believes in Jesus Christ. He has a firm understanding of what he did for us, that he's the only way to God. When he said that, you know, I'm not sure what he said.
Well, he said we worship the same God with reference to Muslims and Christians. What do you make of it, Brady?
Well, it could be like earlier, you know, sometimes you have to be a little bit nuanced. But, I mean, both Christians and people of the Islamic faith, they both come or stem from the God of Abraham.
I don't think that's what the president was saying. I mean, it'd be one thing to say we share historic roots, but he said we worship the same God. You see, talk about nuance. That's just spin there. Let's see. Cliff is calling from his car. Cliff, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thank you. Enjoy your program. I listened in on your program a couple of days ago and heard that Martin Luther had made the same error early in his career, and I wonder why we can't understand that. A Christian like George Bush, who is actually a courageous Christian and did not hold back about claiming Jesus Christ as his personal Savior, why can't we kind of cut him a little slack and understand that he might have made the same mistake?
Well, that might be true if, in fact, Luther did make that mistake, which he didn't. He did not make that mistake. It is a misreading of Luther in the Small Catechism to say that he believed in any sense that Muslims and Christians worship the same God. It's a mistranslation of what he said. Now, you've got to bear in mind, Luther was writing in a different language, but it's a blatant and willful mistranslation that is made by people who want to push the idea that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. Gene, very quickly from his car. Gene, welcome.
Hi, Pastor. How are you? I've never heard your program before. I'm traveling across Illinois from out of state. I enjoyed the interview and the program.
We've got about 10 seconds here.
Okay.
Sorry.
If you believe in Jesus Christ, you got to believe in that God. And if you don't believe in Jesus, you ain't worshiping the same God.
Gene, thank you. That was great. Perfect. It's as simple as that. It is as simple as that. Either the God that Jesus came to reveal, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, is the true God, or Allah is God. You got one of the two. Who do the Muslims worship? A false god, a god of their own imagination. Who knows, for all I know, a demon masquerading as God. Those possibilities are all open to us based upon Scripture. But not the true God. Why? Because they reject Jesus Christ, his Son. And that Son says, when you have me, you have the Father. You don't have me, you don't have the Father, you don't have God. It's that simple. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.